This is the Horse Radio Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hillcrest Bookkeeping Solutions. Are you tired of feeling lost when tax season rolls around? Do you feel anxiety every time you dig out that shoebox of receipts? If you've been searching for a better way to manage your finances and keep your books balanced, Hillcrest Bookkeeping Solutions can help. With a special focus on equine businesses, Hillcrest Bookkeeping provides monthly and quarterly options on most of their services, so you never need to worry about racking up an expensive hourly bill. Spend less time worrying about your books and more time doing what you love. Book your free consultation at hillcrestbookkeeping.com. That's H-I-L-L-C-R-E-S-T bookkeeping.com. And find out how you can run your business more efficiently with a bookkeeper today. Hey, everybody, and thanks for tuning in to episode 14 of the Leadline Podcast. A lot of you may not know this about me, but I got my start in the marketing space as a freelance social media coach and entrepreneur a little over 10 years ago. It was during this time that I met a man named Mike Kim during an event held at a local church where I was volunteering some of my marketing services. Back then, Mike's primary focus was on music, not business or marketing. We didn't really stay in contact regularly over the years, but we remained Facebook friends, and that was how I watched Mike begin to make a big shift away from music and into helping business owners and entrepreneurs build their personal brand. Just this past July, Mike released his very first book called You Are the Brand, where he shares his expertise on how to build a highly profitable personal brand business. Grab a notebook and pen, you're going to want them, and get ready for episode 14 with Mike Kim.
Welcome to the Leadline Podcast, the show where we believe that running your own horse business should feel less like a chore and more like the life you've always dreamed of. Join us as we share valuable advice on how to become more focused, more organized, and more profitable in your horse business. And now, here's your host, Mandy Flanders.
Hey, Mike, and welcome to the Leadline Podcast. I am thrilled to have you here today.
I am glad to be here, Mandy. I just hope that I can add some value to everyone tuning in today. And it is really good to just reconnect after all this time. It's so nice.
Yeah. Well, we were just talking before we hit record today that we think it's been like 10 years since we've seen each other or close to that, somewhere between 8 to 10 years. So it's been a while. A lot has changed since then. But before we dig into the interview today, I want to just say, first and foremost, congratulations. You are the first dude to ever be on my podcast.
Oh, there you go. Oh my gosh, I did not know that. I'm honored. I was on a podcast. A friend of mine runs a podcast called Boss Mom. And I asked her the same thing. Her name's Dana Malstuff. I was like, hey, I'm not a mom. Do you typically have dudes on your show? And she's like, yeah, we've had a few. I was like, okay, cool. But now you have the distinction of being the first podcast where I can truly say I've been the first guy on the show. Well, thank you.
Well, you know, it was maybe a month ago. This is episode 14, so I'm only a few months in. But I was looking at my lineup of guests just recently, like, who do I want to have as the first guy on the podcast? Who's it going to be? And you've been doing so much cool stuff lately that I was like, you know what? Mike would be a great guy to have on the podcast. Let's kick things off with Mike. So here you are.
Here I am. Oh, I'm honored. And I hope I don't disappoint. It can only go downhill from here, everybody.
Fingers crossed. Well, so in the 10 years since we've seen each other, so you and I are both in very different spaces than we were 10 years ago. We met at a conference back in 2011, and you were big in the music scene around that time. Let's talk a little bit about how your journey went from being in the music scene to where you are in the marketing space today.
Yeah. So back all the way back then, 10 plus years ago, I was the music director of this church in Connecticut, which is coincidentally where you met your husband, Tim. Yes. And I've known him for years and years prior to that, just because I had connections to that church. And all those years ago, I remember 2009, Father's Day, I remember this very clearly. I went out to Colorado Springs to visit a church to get mentored by a guy who was sort of doing the same thing I was, but just on a much, much bigger scale. Their church was like tens of thousands of people. And I had a great conversation with him to help me in what I was doing at that time in that position. But I asked myself when I went back to my hotel that afternoon, if everything goes right in the next 15 years, do I want this guy's life? And I said, no. And that was very kind of like an earth-shattering moment for me, because I realized, like, I was climbing this mountain, and then I met somebody who was at the top of the mountain, and I realized I was climbing the wrong mountain, and I didn't know what other mountain I wanted to climb. So slowly over the next 2 years or so, probably right around 2011 when we all met, I was already thinking about transitioning my life, and I was in my early 30s then, and all those sort of things, or mid-30s back then. And now I'm in marketing and branding, and I've been in this space since that time. And I've coached hundreds of people, and I've worked with some really big names in the business space to help them market their message. I love helping entrepreneurs who are trying to do good in the world get their message out there. And wrote a book, launched some courses, held some coaching programs, did some speaking, and here we are. It's kind of crazy. It is.
It is crazy. And I remember when I met you thinking you were like this big cheese in the music world. And then after seeing you transition slowly, you know, over into the marketing realm, I was like, whoa, what is Mike doing now? Because it seems super cool. So let's talk a little bit about this book that you just released. It's called You Are the Brand.
Well, this is the book that I wish I had when I was in that in-between season, right? Because I had Mandy, like I had these life experiences, these professional experiences. I had some abilities from those experiences. I spoken on stage, I could write, I could present, and I didn't have an outlet for this stuff. And I took this marketing position at a company in New Jersey, just outside of Manhattan, and I helped them grow over the next couple of years because I intuitively knew things about marketing. I didn't realize I did, but I did. And I like to joke with people now, like, hey, outside of a wedding planner, I had planned more live events than anybody else out there, just because week to week, you know, doing these services, conferences, and so forth. And yet there were no books that really talked about how to start a business around these things. There were books about how to blog, how to become a public speaker. But I was like, how do you put all this stuff together and do it for somebody? Because marketing people is very different than marketing things or services or objects. A personal brand, which is the space I work in, is really an identity that's a composite of your ideas, your expertise, your reputation, and your personality, which, as evidenced by us catching up, can change a lot over time. It's like sort of trying to nail down Jell-O. It just keeps on wiggling, right? And so I figured there must be some way to systematically and logically teach someone how to build a business around these things. And that's why I wrote the book. I wanted to help people create a compelling personal brand to build their business around. I wanted them to understand how this weird world of marketing people and their ideas works. And I also wanted to encourage people that the best strategy is to just simply tell the truth, be real about who you are, and use that as leverage to stand out in the marketplace.
So what does it mean to build a personal brand as to any other kind of brand?
Well, this is probably better understood through examples. Right. So I don't talk a lot about this in the books. I'm glad we're able to talk about this. I have some other examples in the book, but Spanx clothing line, Sarah Blakely. People know Sarah Blakely almost as well as they know Spanx. You know, some people listen to Sarah Blakely and don't even buy her clothes. And so for those who don't know, Spanx is like, you know, this fitness wear for women. And Sarah Blakely was just like this regular lady. And she was like, this doesn't fit me well. And she cut up, you know, yoga pants and stuff that she bought. And she just sort of used her personal brand to get word out about, you know, her clothes. And sure, she secured capital and investors and all that sort of thing. But she became the story and the face behind the clothing line. You see this in countless other industries. You know, Dave Ramsey, who teaches financial advice, he's got a bunch of books, you know, but what's the one thing that he's done all of these years for decades? He has been the brand. People know him and his methodology. They know his framework. They know Financial Peace University. They know Get Out of the Debt, Snowball, that whole thing. But they also know Dave, right? Look at sports. Mark Cuban, owner of the Dallas Mavericks basketball team. He's on Shark Tank. He's almost more visible to the everyday person than his own basketball team. And so when we talk about a personal brand, these folks, Richard Branson, you know, with Virgin, like Jeff Bezos in Amazon. These aren't people who are just known for their organization. They help their organization or their company become known. And there's an appeal and there's something intangible about each and every one of them that cannot be copied. This sort of came to light to me recently. I interviewed Rick Barker, who was one of Taylor Swift's early managers. And I was like, what stood out to you about Taylor Swift? He's like, she was just a regular girl, but she just had something intangible that couldn't be taught. She just had something about her. And we can look at these rock stars and we can look at these pop stars and these global icons and these celebrities and say, well, I'm not like them. However, we make these decisions every single day with people who might not be quote unquote personal brands. You know, we follow certain people online. We listen to certain bloggers. We listen to certain radio hosts. We listen to certain people's podcasts, right? It's why being the best isn't always what you need to be in order to stand out. Because the best is subjective. There are some people who think LeBron James is probably the best basketball player of our generation, but he's hated by a lot of people. Why? His personality, it's, you know, certain decisions he's made over the years, right? They don't like that about him, even though he's a great player. So all things equal, the differentiator can oftentimes be your personality and your ideas.
Yeah, it's super true. One thing I hear a lot, especially in the equestrian world, and I'm sure it's said a lot in other industries too, is people are hesitant to be the face of their brand. They don't want their name attached to it. They just want their brand name. And that's it at the end of the day. And sometimes I deal with brands, especially like if I'm messaging someone on Facebook or Instagram, where I'm messaging the brand directly, and you have no idea who you're talking to. You don't know who the person is behind the brand. What do you say to the people who have no interest in attaching their name to their brand?
Then you still have to build an identity around the brand. For example, you brought up a great point. You message somebody on their social media channel, who's answering? One of my favorite accounts to follow on Twitter is Wendy's, the hamburger chain. They're snarky. They're hilarious. Their tweets are so funny. They throw shade at all the other restaurants. It's become its own identity. And when I talk about a brand identity, you know, there are three aspects to a brand identity, and all of these are important. You know, if one of them is off, it feels like, you know, three legs on a stool and you're going to tilt over. There's what we call the visual identity, which is what most people think of when we think of a brand, like how it looks. Okay, so you got to be intentional about how your company or your brand looks. Second, as I just alluded to with Wendy's, there's a verbal identity. It's how they talk. You go into Walmart, there's no such thing as the word luxury in Walmart. But if you go into Louis Vuitton, there's no such thing as a discount. They talk a certain way. Right. And then you have the third kind of identity, which is your value identity, which is your positioning and who you are relative to the competition. So even if you don't want to be the face of your brand needs a face. And it's why we see companies like Geico and Progressive, insurance companies. No one wakes up thinking about insurance. You know, we really don't. But what's made their advertising so successful? They put a face, an identity to the brand. You know, in one case it's a gecko and the other it's Flo, the Progressive lady. So if you don't want to be the face of the brand like Sarah Blakely or Mark Cuban or any of those other folks, your brand needs a face. And that's what you have to build out intentionally.
Yeah. And one connection I can make for the horse industry too is I follow an account in the equestrian world on Twitter that's called Mane and Tail. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are like, oh yeah, Mane and Tail. It's a shampoo that works both for the horse and for humans. So they have an account. They have an account on Twitter. And I haven't checked in with them in a bit because I've not been spending a ton of time on Twitter as of lately. But I know last summer there was a guy running their Twitter account and same kind of thing like with Wendy's. Like he was super funny. He was super snarky. And the stuff he would say back, like I would just get into like these joking threads with this guy who was running the Mane and Tail account because it was just hilarious. So,
yeah, it's just funny. It's entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, and with voice and content and social media content, like I understand that that can also be intimidating because, I mean, content is par for the course now. You have to create content if you want to stand out in today's world. And a lot of people get crossed up about content. And there are really three reasons why people tune into content. I mean, you just named one of them. You just want to be entertained. It's just funny. Like, why do we watch shows on Netflix or Amazon Prime or wherever, Hulu, wherever? We want to be entertained. Why do we watch sports? We want to be entertained. Now, you might go onto YouTube and find some videos that are entertaining, but you also, number two, might want to be educated. You want to learn things. You tune into a podcast, you watch a seminar online, you read a book. You're trying to be educated. And then the third is that you want to be inspired. Right? There are certain people we tune into who are these motivational gurus. Or we read stories that aren't necessarily informative and educational, but they are inspiring. And so when we talk about building a brand in today's world and on social media, you know, you named one just now. Be entertaining, be educational, or be inspiring. You're probably going to be a mix of those three at some point in the brand. You know, insurance, I mean, I don't want to learn about insurance. I just kind of want to set it and forget it. But at some point, they have to teach us what coverage we need. But if they can do it in an entertaining fashion, it's more appealing to everybody. It cuts through the noise. So, you know, education, entertainment, inspiration, it's why we tune into content. So part of forming the brand is exactly what you said about entertainment.
Is there one specific item out of that list that you just shared that someone should be focusing on if it's overwhelming to them to tackle all three?
I think for this industry, you're probably going to be in the educational space, right? Because you're teaching prospects something. You're teaching them. You're sharing your expertise. But you can't do that all the time, right? Your brand can't do that all the time. I'm primarily an educator. But there are moments where I just let my dry, weird sense of humor come through. People think it's funny. Or I share a story from my everyday life that is inspiring. An example of this recently, you mentioned I wrote this book, and my mom hates being on camera, but I put her on camera. I filmed her. I caught her off guard, and I filmed her reaction to me handing her my book for the first time. And it was a very heartfelt moment. There was no educational content in it. There was no, like, here's how to market yourself. You know, it was just an inspiring moment. And I got so much engagement off of that post. And people said this. They said, I feel like I got to know you better. And isn't that what we want as brands? Isn't that what we want our prospects to feel when they see an ad or see a social media post? We want them to feel like they get to know us better because people do business with folks that they know, like, and trust.
Yeah, I've seen that content from you too. And it's funny because we said we haven't seen each other in like 8 to 10 years, but I feel like I've very much kept up with everything that you're doing. So when we think about that time frame, you know, yes, it's been a long time, but I still feel like I've kept in contact with you, even though we really haven't talked that much over the years. It's just based on the content that you've been putting out on social media.
Yeah, and it allows me to stay top of mind, quote unquote, allows you to stay top of mind. I've been following your content. For sure, you know, and when something big comes along that we're interested in, it's the same thing with prospects. They may say, "Hey, let me join you on this." You know, I had a book launch, and a book's not expensive, and I had a lot of people said, "I've been following you for years, but I stopped listening to your podcast a little while ago just because, you know, things caught up with me. Life just kind of took me away from it, but I bought your book." You know, and these are folks who have, quote unquote, known me for years, you know, and others who have never heard of me, and they'll buy a book because it's, you know, cheap. It's not a huge investment. And then they'll start following me on social media and start to see my content. And I now become what? Top of mind. Right. So it's just a cool, it is very cool because I say this, marketing isn't about closing a sale. It's about opening a relationship. And keeping this content out there, just sharing your journey, allows you to maintain a relationship. Even if we haven't seen each other face-to-face in 10 years, we're seeing each other on one of our most intimate and private devices, which is our phone. You know, and that's where we're connecting with the world. And so it's really a powerful thing if you think about it.
It really is. Well, Mike, I want to dive a little more into some of the content in your book because I've been reading it. I was actually part of your book launch team, so that was pretty exciting and pretty fun to be part of. And so you talk in chapter 2 a bit about how-to-preneurs and ideapreneurs. One thing that a lot of folks do get stuck on is like figuring out exactly what direction they want to go in with their business. They know they've got this cool idea and the service, but a lot of people struggle to explain what it is that they do. And part of that is because they don't know exactly what it is that they want to do. So you talk a bit about these two different examples, the how-to-preneur and the idea-preneur. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between the two?
Yeah, how-to-preneur basically teaches someone how to fix a problem or does it for them. And usually there's a process. There's a step-by-step framework or formula, if you will. I'm a how-to-preneur. People ask me, how do I fix my marketing? How do I do better marketing? And I can fix it for them by and large. I can look at a system of things or a list of assets that they have or don't have and kind of fix the issue for them. The advantage of being a how-to-preneur is everybody knows what I do. They kind of understand, okay, you're a plumber. You fix my leaky sink or you fix my marketing. And the disadvantage is that there are a lot more people who do that. I have a lot of competition, right? There are a lot of people who teach marketing and branding, and there are a lot of plumbers out there. So that's kind of the good and the bad of it. Now, an ideapreneur doesn't even necessarily want to solve a problem. They just want to raise awareness about a certain issue. They are more like a philosopher. They're trying to advocate for a certain point of view. And an ideapreneur can monetize. They can make money off of their message. It's just that there's an extra step because they have to convince people that there's a problem that needs to be, that they need to be made aware of in the first place. It's hard to sell someone a solution to a problem they don't think they have. So one of the stories I tell in the book a couple years ago, my sister Esther handed me this book by a Japanese author named Marie Kondo. And it was called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. And I got all offended. I was like, are you saying I'm dirty? Like, what? Why would I read this? I'm not dirty. I'm a pretty clean person, all things considered, right? And the genius of Marie Kondo's book is that it was not called How to Be Clean, because she would have offended a lot of people. A lot of people would say, I don't have a problem with being dirty, so I'm not going to buy the book. Instead, she positioned the book as an idea. And the idea was to live a minimalistic lifestyle, right? A tidy lifestyle, a clutter-free lifestyle. And the premise of the book is you go through all the items in your home and you hold it in your hands like a shirt or, you know, a book or whatever. And you ask yourself, does this spark joy in me? And if it doesn't, you release it. You thank the item, quote unquote, release it and you know, let it into the world. Or as normal people say, they throw it in the trash. Okay. Right. But the genius of all this, again, is that she's really advocating for minimalistic philosophies. All of this stuff has its roots in the national Japanese religion of Shintoism. Japanese people are minimalist by nature. So this is really a philosophy book disguised as some book about like decluttering your life or cleaning your house, but it's really a philosophical book. So a lot of people get crossed up between the two because while a how-to-preneur has the advantage of making the problem they solve very clear, the idea-preneur doesn't. Most people aren't sure what they're trying to sell or what they're trying to advocate for. They're not convinced that there's even a problem. We can get into even political waters for this. I mean, you look at half the United States is convinced that coronavirus isn't really that serious. You know, what is the battle here for everyone who's on the other side trying to advocate for vaccines and whatnot? Wherever you stand on the issue, the illustration is that the reason it's such a difficult thing to navigate is half the population just simply doesn't believe it's an issue. You know, and if your business is like that, good luck. If the United States government cannot fix this, you know, good luck you doing it on your own. So you have to tell stories. You know, part of what we talked about, stories, content, and to get it out there.
You talk a lot in your book about telling personal stories and using that as a method to grow your business. It's a way to bring people in and attract them to what you're doing and attract them to your message. What kind of personal stories, give us some examples, like what kind of personal stories can someone use in their business to attract more of their audience?
Yeah, I always say that there are three stories every business owner needs to be able to tell in their marketing, every company, regardless of who it is. They need to be able to tell the founder story, the business story, which is how the business started, and then the customer story, you know, how a person's life was transformed as a result of the business. All these three stories are different. You are not your business, even if you're a solopreneur. You're not your business. Jeff Bezos is not Amazon. Like figuratively speaking, maybe he is. But they are separate things. There's a reason that guy got into commerce and selling things out of his garage. Amazon has its own birthday. It was launched at some date, you know, wherever and whenever it was. It's different. They're two different entities. So when I look at a business, and I'm glad we talked about the how-topreneurs versus ideapreneurs, this is what I found, Mandy, that on one hand, how-topreneurs can tell you what problem they solve very easily. They cannot tell you personally why it drives them or why they went into this business. They are so in their problem-fixing mode, they don't have a heart. They're so in their head, they're not in their heart. And on the flip side, the ideapreneur is so in their heart, you can't figure out what problem they actually solve. You know, so there's this gap both ways. So when I look at the stories, I'm like, okay, we need to be able to tell the founder story, the business story, and the customer story. So the founder story, I simply dig into by asking my clients two questions. What pisses you off and what breaks your heart? Like, about this industry, why you got into this, you know, what pisses you off and what breaks your heart? And when I ask them these questions, a lot of times people will cry because they'll realize it's connected to something way deeper than they originally thought. It might be, I'm in this industry because what pisses me off is that, you know, there's so much commercialism out there and these horses are being harmed and our prospects are being led astray. And what breaks my heart is to see these horses just, you know, being used for X, Y, Z, whatever it is. I'm just filling in the blanks. But that right there is a gripping founder story. That's why I started this company, XYZ company. That's the business story. And here are some customers whose lives have been transformed, they and their horses, as a result of our product. And that's the transformation story. That's the customer story. And you can see that when you have that message, it's very easy. You're not being salesy. You don't sound like a used car salesman. You don't sound like an infomercial at night. It's just natural because it stems from the core. So the founder story, the business story, and the customer story. So important.
Now, once you have that story, do you find that people get more clarity on where they're going when they actually figure out their why, when they start looking at those stories? Is that part of the foundation of getting more clarity on what you want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. Because you need to know where you're going, you need to know where you're starting. I mean, if I put in my GPS and say I want to go to San Francisco, it's going to ask me where I am, you know, from where are you? You know, where are you? And so with these stories, like one of the things that happened to me when I went through these questions myself, what pisses you off, what breaks your heart, what's the big problem you're trying to solve, is that I realized I thought that I was a marketer, and I realized I'm not. I do marketing, but what really ticked me off and what broke my heart was seeing people live a life that was less than what they wanted it to be. For me, the solution was starting my own business, becoming an entrepreneur, sharing my ideas, sharing my expertise. And I want to help other people do that. So I almost feel like, you know, dare I say it, I'm like a life coach hidden as, you know, disguised as a marketing consultant. That's what really helps me makes me come alive. Because if I was just a marketing guy, I would market anything. I would market Q-tips. I'd market aluminum cups. I'd market bottled water. But that's not my heart. My heart is to help people, everyday people who have great ideas, who have wisdom, who have experiences, distill that into a message that can make the world a better place, or distill that into expertise that can create a product that can make the world a better place. And that's just my lane. And it stems from, you know, that core belief, you know, and that desire, which is to help people live a life of impact.
And I think going back to the how-topreneur versus ideapreneur, you almost have to break them down into different segments as you go, because not everybody that's in the how-topreneur space is going to serve their clients in the same way. Because you were saying how-topreneur, they either fix a problem for them or they teach their clients how to fix a problem. And being someone who does a done-for-you service versus an educator, again, two very different things. So there's almost different segments that kind of expand upon each of those different, you know, the how-topreneur versus ideapreneur.
Yeah. And that was a great relief to me, because I was like, oh my gosh, there's so many people who out there who are marketing people and stuff like that. And I said, wait, let me pause for a second. What do I offer that other people don't? And early on in my career, I did a lot of done for you stuff. These days, I do a lot more teaching and educational content. I'll do coaching online and so on and so forth. But back then it was, let me write your campaigns for you. Let me write your copy. let me provide the strategy for your launch and for your campaigns. And these days I'm more just teaching. And that was intentional over time. I wanted to be able to do that. But positioning is really knowing where you stand relative to the competition. And there's always an advantage that you have. There really is. It's what you do. It's how you do it. It's how you say it. It's how you teach it. I swear there are some people who just hire me because they like me. They just like my personality. And there are other people who don't, and they don't hire me. And that's okay, you know? So I look at it, there are billions of people in this world. All I really need to do is help a few of them. I'll make a good living and I'll be fine, you know? So that's really honestly how I look at it.
Right. And there's so many people. There's plenty of customers to go around. You don't need to cater to everybody. And not everybody is going to like you. And like you said, that is okay. You're going to attract the people that you want to attract. What's maybe one of your top one or two tips that you have for someone who's trying to get clarity on where they're going as a brand?
Well, we've covered a lot so far, but when I think about brand clarity, and I don't really talk a lot about this in the book because it's harder to explain just in a one way, you know, medium, right? But one of the things that I really think is important for us as business owners is to take ownership of the words we want people to use to describe us. A couple of years ago, I had a client, I was helping him write his book. He's very well known in the business space. And we recounted a story. He had written some earlier books, memoirs, really. And he was sitting on a plane next to a gentleman reading his book. And he's like, oh, this is hilarious. This is great. I'm just going to ask him about this book. He doesn't seem to know I'm the author. And they were going to the same event where this the author was speaking at this event. And so he goes to the gentleman. He's like, hey, what's that book about? He's like, oh, you know, it's this book, kind of a memoir. And he just rambled on for like 2 minutes. And the author is like, gosh, this is boring. Like, I wouldn't even want to read this book the way he's talking. And that's my book, right? And he didn't tell the gentleman that he was the author of the book. He just didn't realize it. And then, of course, he sees him at the conference. And, you know, this guy has this kind of like weird moment. It's like, oh, my gosh, I just sat next to, you know, the author, right? And we told the story in his book because we wanted to illustrate this point that when you want to build a brand, you have to take ownership of the words that you want people to use to describe you. And that can be difficult. It can be a journey. Just do it. Nike. Nobody said that for them. They came up with the slogan of their marketing team and they hired somebody or whatever. And they put it and plaster it all over everything. You know, we talked about politics just a moment ago. The politicians are the ones that give you the good ones, not good politicians, but the good campaigners. Let me say it that way, right? The good campaigners are the ones that give you memorable slogans that you can repeat over and over and over again. Say what you will about him, that's one thing Donald Trump was brilliant at. The fact that we can rattle off 3 or 4 of his slogans without even thinking about it is huge. Name one slogan that Hillary Clinton put out there. You can't. So he supplied the words that he wanted everyone else to parrot and repeat over and over again to everyone else. The best companies who use their Geico, 15 minutes. Save 15%. They give you the words. Now, those are slogans. A slogan doesn't fix everything. A slogan is far from being everything. But my point here is that those were supplied by the business owner. Now, if you're starting in this brand journey, working with, you know, Mandy, if they're working with you or with me or any other consultant out there, you know, we know that one of the first questions that we're going to ask folks is what do you want people to feel about your brand? Like feel, not just say, but feel. And that can be different across the board, but it has to be intentional. And those are the first steps, really, to acknowledge that it's your job to give the words you want to people, you know, to use. And secondly, to really think deeper about how you want people to feel about your brand. And then you go down the process.
Well, that's some great advice, Mike. So for anyone that wants to look you up further and check out this new book that you've just recently put out, where can they go to learn more?
Yeah, the book is called You Are the Brand. We were thrilled. It did really well on launch week. It hit the Wall Street Journal and the USA Today bestseller list. That's super cool. Who would have figured 10 years ago when we were hanging out, If you told me 10 years ago, right? Like, that's crazy. That's just crazy. Like, Mike, in 10 years, you're going to be a marketing guy and you're going to write this book and it's going to hit these lists. I'll be like, Mandy, what are you on right now? Like, what are you smoking? Right. But you can find the book on Amazon, all major retailers. And if you like podcasts, give mine a shot. You know, here you are listening to a podcast. My podcast is called You Are the Brand. We rebranded it. And it's a sync up with the book. And it's all about just using your personal brand, your ideas, your expertise, your reputation, your personality to make an impact in the world. And that's really it. So find me online.
Awesome. Well, it's a great podcast. I've been listening to yours for quite a while, Mike. You're one of my go-tos, along with Pat Flynn's Smart Passive Income podcast. So you two have like my top two favorite podcasts. So we'll give both of those a shout out today. And you were recently on Pat's podcast as well. So I just checked out that interview, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. And he's one of the big podcasts out there. And we've just known each other for years. You know, slowly here over time and met at different events. And like you mentioned, you know, just keep in touch through social media, kind of keep tabs on each other. And several years ago, he was like, hey, why don't you come on the podcast? I said, I'm really grateful for that, but can I wait a little while and I'll just let you know when I really need you? He said, sure. And I said, hey, remember a couple of years ago, you said, reach out if I need you? I need you. And he opened that slot on the show and he released the interview the week the book launched. And it was a huge help to getting awareness out about the book. So there you go. Relationships, right? All this content we created for years just to maintain and build those relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, once again, Mike, thanks so much. And for our listeners, be sure to check out Mike's book, youarethebrandbook.com. It's a great book. I've read it and highly recommend it. So thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mandy.
If you've been enjoying these episodes of the Leadline podcast, can I ask you to do two quick things for me? Subscribe to the show so you always know when we have a new episode released. And be sure to leave us a review so other people know that this is the go-to podcast for equine entrepreneurs. Reviews help us continue to climb in the rankings and reach more people, and it would really help me out. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember, let's make more money, have more time, and have fun with our horses. I'm Mandy, and I'll see you next time.